Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
What would you think if I sang out a tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me?
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Aaron Zomers is back at the studio playing with a little help from my friends, because I have my friends. Whether they're helpful remains to be seen. Dude, based on the first hour.
Dude, he said he played that song because Kristen was saying how she doesn't sing out of key. He didn't say it because with a little help from my friends. That was the first.
You realize you're only proving my point that I'm not getting help from my friends at all.
It was little column A, little column B.
The help from your friends was, we said, come join us. Come hither, Pat. Come gather around our little single mic over here so we could all be one happy family.
I'm listening to you, Aaron.
Oh, I just said little column A, little column B. It was because all the friends are here and because you were specifically talking about not singing out of key.
See?
Oh, what a politician. So great. You got them both in there. My friends, Dr. Kristen Lyerly and Kirk Bankstead of the Minocqua Brewing Company Super Pack are here all together in a room for the first time, despite doing radio, many more shows than we can count already. Just finally got a chance to sit down together, solve some of the problems of the world, and now we are passing on that knowledge to you, proving once again why Zoom is a beautiful thing and why we're going to be back in separate boxes next week, you know, and for the foreseeable future. But for now, you're here. We're very thankful about that. We learned in the last hour a bit more about, you know, Kirk and his hobbies and his passions and his motivations. We learned some medical news from Dr. Lyerly in the past hour, so we're going to get more personal with her during this hour yet to come. But first we have to pick on her professionally once again, which is, again, not something that she necessarily sought out, but who, you know, when your own health rights are attacked and, you know, taken away, you're going to speak up a bit. You don't really feel like you have a choice.
I have to. Mm-hmm. I can't look my patients in the eye when mm-hmm. I'm in the exam room, and there is a barrier that is arbitrary and that the government has put there. I can't look them in the eye and say, I'm sorry, I can't do anything. I have to try to do something.
Right. No. Again, your first duty is to your patients, mm-hmm. you know, not to what the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, what the right wing justices demand that you do, or in this case, a candidate for governor. Mm-hmm. So looking off of the story, the version that I'm looking at is from wispolitics.com. And, you know, that is that Tim Michaels was speaking to the Milwaukee Rotary Club on Tuesday. Now, when Governor Evers did, he agreed to have a media panel. And so reporters asked him questions. He answered them all. Then he took questions from the audience. Tim Michaels said no. He did not want questions from reporters. He just wanted questions that were submitted in advance by audience members. And he said in response to one of them that in terms of his abortion position, he said, quote, he would never arrest a doctor. And then the campaign had to walk that back, believe it or not, in part because governors don't arrest people.
Right. So,
again,
cuff me, Tim Michaels.
You asked yesterday, does he know what job he's running for?
I mean, he said a number of things that make me wonder.
Yes, well, and my response was, he told you what job he's running for. He's running for sheriff because he's repeatedly used the line, there's a new sheriff in town.
And pew, pew,
pew, pew. that's what he's looking to do, Aaron.
If I may play a little audio clip from the show Parks and Rec. Luke Mathers here said that there's a striking similarity between what Bobby Newport, the fake like person running for election in town, is saying and the way Tim Michaels talks. And I'll just play a really short one here that is very similar to what they just said.
All right, play the clip.
People keep asking me, Bobby, what are you going to do once you get in office? I'm pretty sure I'll figure it out.
truer words were never spoken.
Yeah, well, so the first part of what you said, I think we should kind of expand upon a little bit, is that Tim Michaels wasn't willing to take any questions from the media.
Yes.
Because this is seemingly part and parcel of the entire Republican strategy.
We've got Derek Van Orden refusing to debate in the third congressional race. Mm-hmm. We have a number of state Republican candidates refusing to debate. And I believe it's because there's a couple questions that they know are going to be asked of them that if they answer truthfully, they'll probably tick off every Republican that might be voting. And so the first question is the one that's most important to me is, would you accept the results of the election if you didn't win? Mm-hmm. Now, if they say, yes, we'll accept the results of the election, then all of these Republicans who've been ginned up first by Trump and then all these election deniers who they've been ginned up to expect fraud if they don't win, because it's got to be fraud if they don't win.
Only if they don't win.
Only if they don't win.
If they win, then there is no fraud.
Then there is no fraud. And so nobody, no Republican wants to get asked this question, because if they say they trust in our electoral system, then they'll say that what they've been saying for the last 2 years following the big lie has all been a lie. Mm-hmm. And that plus, of course, would you have exceptions for rape and incest in this new world that we have post Roe?
And it led to, you know, again, Michael's making his comment saying, I will never arrest a doctor. I'm a reasonable guy. And then his spokeswoman later saying the DA should enforce all laws. The governor is an executive. He's not a DA. So, again, looking for a loophole so that they can continue to threaten to arrest doctors. We'll continue right after this break here up north. Listen to them just giggling.
Aaron's on fire today. Aaron's on fire. Way to go, Aaron.
Aaron is not playing that because you are my friends from both places.
Thanks, Aaron.
It's simply a song about friendship.
We're not in low places. We're almost in the same latitude. It's like Minocqua, Green Bay, Eau Claire. It's not so, it's kind of like right there.
We're all up north.
Exactly. That's the world in high places.
The opposite.
Come on, Aaron.
Maybe it should be, we've got a friend in a lower place, and that's referring to me instead. I don't know.
Oh, no. Don't do that to yourself. You're on this team whether you like it or not.
Well, I guess up north is a state of mind.
Go ahead, Aaron. I'm sorry.
Oh, I guess up north is a state of mind. So wherever I am, I'm still up north.
There you go.
We were talking about Tim Michaels and his appearance before the Milwaukee Rotary Club, and I wanted to reference another remark, one that will, you know, is guaranteed to get under my skin every time, because again, it's so blatantly off about trying to understand what public service is about and what government is supposed to be about. Michaels floated again the idea on Tuesday of breaking up the Department of Natural Resources into two different entities, one that serves the business side and one that serves the hunter and sportsman side. That's not the point of the Department of Natural Resources. It's not to serve business. It's not even necessarily to serve people. You provide good service to people. The service is to, say it with me, kids, our natural resources.
Heck, the environment, brother.
So,
in the state of Wisconsin, which had an amazing senator in Gaylord Nelson, who invented Earth Day. I know I bring this up every time we talk, but I still cannot believe that with everything that's happening with climate and with all of the natural resources that we have here in this state and the tourism dollars that draw people to Wisconsin, that we don't respect our natural resources more. You know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
We need to embrace our natural resources, not tear it apart.
Because we again get this, you know, business talk about running government like a business. Mm-hmm. No, government is not a business. And even in the editorial I did yesterday for the Up North News newsletter, which you can get by going to upnorthnews.wi.com, click newsletter at the top banner. I feel like there's a little cash register should ping every time I do a commercial. But the editorial yesterday was using the Tim Michaels quote about fighting inflation and saying that I understand macroeconomics and you've got to put more money into everybody's pocket. which shows that he does not understand macroeconomics. Inflation is caused by a shortage of supply, kinks in the supply chain because of the pandemic. So if the shelves are empty, if you don't have the supply, Tim Michaels can pull millions out of his pocket. Literally, he can. But that's not going to make the shelf fill up any faster. So he doesn't get fighting inflation. You have to improve the supply chain. You have to increase manufacturing. You have to provide targeted help to small business, the way Governor Evers has with pandemic aid. So it's not a surprise that he thinks the Department of Natural Resources is also supposed to operate like a business. Now, I'm going to be fair for a minute. Like any other agency, like any other business, frankly, there can always be too much red tape. There can always be too much paperwork. Things can always be streamlined, made more efficient. I get that. But that's not what he and others like him are talking about. They're talking about breaking up the agency, basically politicizing it so that it will let, you know, corporate farms, you know, take out as much water from the water table as they want, let them dump as much, you know, nutrient waste, you know, on the land that they want, give industry a blank check. If we had done that 100 years ago in Wisconsin, we wouldn't have the things that we're enjoying right now. We have those because of a Department of Natural Resources and a mindset that said, let's protect our natural resources.
So he also said the same thing about breaking up Milwaukee public schools. You know, let's like politicizing schools, letting everybody have a choice of where to send their kids, which would destroy public schools. It would, you know, enrich the corporate for-profit schools. But what I'm liking is that at least we're talking about issues instead of hearing about how Evers somehow, you know, let everybody down in Kenosha or something like that. Like bringing terrible, like saying things that are ridiculous. Like, you know, kids got dumber during pandemic because we decided to not put them in, you know, cesspools of virus, you know, necessarily. Like everyone didn't learn as well during COVID because the whole world couldn't like be together and be in school. It's not a politician's fault. I'm glad at least we're learning about how Michaels wants to corporatize the DNR, which would pollute Wisconsin, how he'd like to corporatize public schools, which would kill our public education. At least we're talking about issues, and now he's showing he's terrible on these issues.
But we're only talking about the issues because he was asked about it at the Rotary Club meeting. What he and other primarily Republican politicians who aren't engaging in debates, what they're wanting to do is just hide behind their commercials. They just want to communicate that way because they can have pretty much unlimited funds in politics now. So you can, as you know, the billionaires who have bought all of those ads, you know, just downright racist ads targeting Mandela Barnes. And so Ron Johnson, you know, doesn't have to say much. He does anyway because he can't help himself. But, you know, Tim Michaels and a lot of legislative Republicans are not engaging in these debates, and they're not talking about issues because they just want to hide behind the TV.
Well, because they know the public, if they actually talked about these issues, the public, by and large, would be against every single one of them. Because the public of Wisconsin is not rich. You know, the average income in our neck of the woods is like $35,000 a year, which is barely enough to, you know, pay your bills.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So anything that says, yeah, we're going to privatize, you know, we're going to like sully the ability to fish, which is like the only like it's like something that we like you don't have to be rich to do in northern Wisconsin.
But they're doing that by defunding the DNR.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there are fish populations up in northern Wisconsin that they've been stocking forever, but they're now having to make really difficult decisions about, I think it's trout. I'm not a great fisher person, but they can't keep stocking these lakes because they don't have the people to continue to maintain this industry in Wisconsin. And the people who choose to fish, who live there, who come there specifically to fish, are going to lose out. But they don't realize because it's at the bottom of a long chain of a conversation. And we're just paying attention to the headline or the slogan.
Yeah.
Like defund the police is one of the most ridiculous arguments I've ever heard. After George Floyd happened, you heard that from some folks on the left. You didn't hear it from everybody, but you definitely heard it. But they've really latched on to that. The vast majority of people don't agree with that. We need police reform. There's no question. But who's really defunding the police? It's the legislature. Our Republican legislature has been defunding the police for over a decade by cutting shared revenue so municipalities don't have enough money to spend on essential services like police and fire. So in Green Bay, they got body cameras last year. That wasn't from their budget. That was from the Packers. They got a grant from the Packers to get body cameras. That's essential equipment for them. Why do they have to get a grant to get essential equipment? That should be budgeted. That should come from the state legislature.
Well, and the other one, the other example of that is what, again, Michael's referred to it in the debate when he said, we're going to get rid of the Zuckerbucks.
Yes.
The whole reason that the Center for Tech and Civic Life is the name of the foundation that Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, you know, funded, was to give grants to communities all over Wisconsin and all over the country, because legislatures like the Republican-led one in Wisconsin are terribly underfunding local governments, and so they can't afford to put on elections that would be as safe and secure as they would like without having to take the money away from law enforcement or other functions. And so again, to go after the private funding is a ruse, basically, rather than face up and acknowledge that they are underfunding the very important local services like elections and law enforcement that we need.
We actually have a referendum on our ballot about the Zucker funding right now in Brown County.
It's you referenced earlier about people that were helping to stock lakes, and it reminded me of a story that Susan Lampert Smith did for us over the summer about, you know, again, the DNR can only do so much, but it was a story about five retired DNR employees who have been working as volunteers to restore the Starhead top minnow in parts of the Wisconsin River near Prairie du Sac. Because again, they know that the DNR can't take on all of this. So as retirees, they look for grant funding and things like that to get some work done, and you know, bless them for it, but that shouldn't be how it works. We should be able to fund all of our necessary services.
Yes.
Our tax structures, that's what they've been doing for years, is saying we're gonna cut taxes, you know, to, you know, and it's not that much, but it cuts essential services. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I grew up, we were one of the best schools, you know, for our size of a state, we had one of the best school systems in the country. Mm-hmm. And that was, it's been cut to the bone. Mm-hmm. As well as the DNR, as well as police funding, as well as municipality funding, where we're no longer, you know, you can't have as much pride in Wisconsin that you used to be able to have. And people didn't, my parents, you know, it's like everyone doesn't like to pay taxes, but mm-hmm. like when you could see what you were getting mm-hmm. with your tax dollars, mm-hmm. Like the middle class was like, yeah, well, we could be living in Mississippi right now, where right. the public schools are terrible, you know? So I'd rather pay good taxes and have my kids get educated well. I'd rather have beautiful lakes and streams and pay a little bit more in taxes to do that. As long as you can see that you're getting something for your taxes, mm-hmm. you're okay with paying a little bit more in taxes.
Public schools don't just benefit my kids who go to public schools. I mean, you don't have a kid in the public schools, but you recognize that when we fund our public schools, we create a society of people who are ready to enter the world and participate in communities and work in essential jobs. I mean, just because you are not personally benefiting at this very moment, it doesn't mean that this doesn't benefit you in greater ways. We've got to keep our eye on the big picture.
I have more Facebook trolls because our public schools have gone down the tubes. Well, you can tell these folks haven't been on the same page as an iPad.
One of the more, you know, audacious things that was said during the debate was, you know, Tim Michaels was challenged on by Frederica Freiberg, saying, why should taxpayers have to pay for two parallel school systems?
Right.
And he Michaels made the case like, well, because, you know, the one is failing, so we need to take that money and put it toward the other. It's like, well, that's the exact opposite approach to what we need to be doing. We need to be shoring up public education, but he kept referring to it as tuition dollars, that parents should be able to take their tuition dollars and go to a private school with that if they want to, even if it's religious or for profit or what have you. No, it's not tuition money. Those are taxes we paid, we all paid, so that all of our children could have access to an affordable public education that had high quality to it. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that we should be talking about funding. And many people do. And I mean, the number of referenda that get approved is nice, but it shouldn't have to be that way. We should be funding schools off of the state income tax, which is much more progressive, mm-hmm. and adequately providing those funds, you know, as needed to school districts around the state, not creating a second school system, which exists basically to, you know, get rid of the public school system. And that we would be taking such a step backwards after that. This is Up North News for a Wednesday, live from the Lake Wissota studio with friends. We'll be back right after this. You are truly up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome to the halfway point of Up North News for a Wednesday morning.
Aaron is so on this morning.
Aaron's on point.
Damn.
He guzzled the coffee this morning. He guzzled it.
We are live from Lake Wissota, the first home edition of Up North News, having our friends Kristen Lyerly and Kirk Bankstead here, and then we'll have more friends joining us in the next hour, if they dare.
Well, we've got it down now, Pat. We only took the first hour and a half for us to get our technical difficulties picked up.
Yeah.
Now that we've got this, we need to do this all the time.
As we all crowd around a single microphone there.
It's like we're like this bluegrass man. There is some time in the bluegrass band.
Name the album. Name the album cover. Because that's what we're doing. We're posing for album covers here. I'm really glad you guys are here. I'm glad to get to talk to you guys. We had some great conversation last night. We focused on work so often and current events that we're so happy to finally learn a bit, you know, just more about what we like, what our background is. And since we did Kirk in the last hour, we're going to do Kristen in this hour.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the one thing that, I mean, there's so many things you can ask her about. Why did she choose to become a doctor? Why OBGYN? You know, talk about your wonderful sons, et cetera, et cetera. But she was Goldie Gopher. For did you say 3 years?
Yeah.
For 3 years. Why? Now, and that's not a dig at the U of M. I mean, you go to college where you go to college.
You can dig at the U of M.
But it strikes me as the kind of thing that you think sounds like a good idea. And then you do like one event or one game in this big heavy costume and you go, I'm out. You did it for years.
I loved it. The first year that I did it, I was the only Goldie. So I did football, basketball, hockey, special events. There were weekends in the fall where I probably did 5 different sporting events. It was exhausting and wonderful.
And studied, allegedly, for classes and things.
Well, as we discussed last night, I did take a few extra years to graduate from college. But
you did.
It's not about the destination. It's about the journey.
And what a journey this was. Did you seek that out, or were you like thrust upon it? Somebody said, hey, why don't you try this out, you know?
I totally sought it out. When I was in high school, I got a mascot for my high school as a senior, but I wasn't the mascot. Mm-hmm. I just like arranged it. I was like the pep person. I know that's shocking.
Yeah.
And when I went to college, I went to Minnesota because I wanted to study architecture. And Minnesota has a great architecture program. And Wisconsin only has one architecture school, MSOE, but it was private and we couldn't afford it. So I ended up at the University of Minnesota not knowing anything about the Big Ten or the rivalry with the Badgers. I had no clue. I was a Badger, but I was just going to be in Minneapolis. And then I lived in the dorm with all of the athletes and got to understand the culture a little bit. And got this crazy idea that it would be fun to be the mascot. So I had to serve 1 year in the marching band because the mascot was part of the marching band. And that was just, those are the best people. My marching band friends are, Yeah, really amazing. They're actually doing a 50th year celebration of Title IX weekend at the university and inviting women down. It was a real struggle to integrate women in the band. And I had joined the band just maybe 15 years after that. We had no clue what women before that had gone through. So now looking back, it's really quite remarkable.
That, before I forget, we're going to come back to Goldie Gopher, I promise.
I'm trying to change the subject.
When you mentioned, you know, the struggles that women had gone through 50 years earlier and such, mm-hmm. I never got a call like this before. I got this call the other night before last, and I was not expecting it because my mom, God love her, has, you know, she doesn't call to say, hey, good job, Sonny, but she... She called the other night to say, I got to tell you about that show you did yesterday morning.
Oh, yeah.
And I was starting to get all puffed up like, oh, what did I do? It's like that Kristen had those women on from Northern Door Activism. And she went on about the three women from Door who were getting organized. Because like she noted back when she was growing up in the late 60s or coming into adulthood in the mid 60s. Mm-hmm. You couldn't get a credit card unless you had a letter from your husband. Mm-hmm. You couldn't get... Yeah. You couldn't get what? Birth control pills without, you know.
Oh, yeah. There was a woman at the event that the Northern Door women put on who told us the story in the middle of the event about how she had to get a note from her husband to be able to get her birth control pills.
Right. And that's, again, the U.S. Supreme Court case, Griswold v. Connecticut, that gave the right to privacy is what Clarence Thomas and others want to get rid of.
It's in danger. Contraception is in danger.
And it would allow on a state-by-state basis, you know, including here in Wisconsin, a gerrymandered legislature could go backwards in those ways. And you may say, oh, that'll never happen. Yeah, they'll never repeal Roe v. Wade either. Sure.
Right.
It'll never happen.
I know. There is so much at stake here. And I was so heartened by those women with the Northern Door Activism Group. They came together because of the Dobbs decision, and they knew that they had to do something. But they had never done anything like this before. They've never been political. They've never organized. They're small business owners. And they just put their heads together. They found the right people. They connected with other organizations, and they are making a huge difference in their small town up north.
Yeah. So that's what it took to get a call from my mom to say, hey, nice show. Because those women really resonated with her. So that was a great thing. But we were talking about how that was the case 50 years ago, and Title IX is being celebrated for its 50th anniversary. So will you go and will you put the costume on?
I should. Oh, I should. I was the second female Goldie.
Okay.
Yeah. So I wasn't the first.
You said something last night about the power that comes when you're wearing a mascot costume, that you can move entire crowds.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's the mascot costume that can move entire crowds. I mean, rock stars do it all the time, but being a mascot, you're doing it anonymously and you're doing it as a symbol. And I remember thinking, I am the symbol of the University of Minnesota and really the state of Minnesota. And that's a really heavy responsibility. But I love engaging people and making people happy and, you know, getting people excited about a football team that was really kind of hard to get excited about. Mm-hmm. So it was like just
forever,
a total... They're doing really well this year.
Are they?
Better than the Badgers. Well, I love the Badgers.
Come on. I mean, that's a fluke.
Hashtag Sadgers. You were never a mascot, but you were...
No, I was.
You were.
Well, uh-huh. But it wasn't in that... Not at all as big as that. But in Stevens Point, they had a Shoney's briefly, but right, like probably in the... I graduated in 95, so it was like in the 90s. And so I was a waiter at Shoney's, but then all of a sudden they created this kids' night on Wednesdays where all the kids ate free or something. So they bought this Shoney Bear costume. And that's when I was talking to I was like, Kristen, they had a fan in your head, right? Because they had a fan. They had a fan in my head.
In your head?
Yeah. So because you sweat like crazy with your wearing like fur costumes.
Yeah.
So I had a fan in my head. But what I didn't say.
It's fancy.
Yeah. What I didn't say was that the day that I took my costume off for good was the day that this little kid was like, you're not a real bear. And guess where he kicked me?
No. It wasn't the fan in the head.
He couldn't reach his leg all the way up to my head, but he reached it somewhere else. And I was like, oh my God, who are you, you little mongrel?
A fancy fan in your head couldn't save you then.
No, I doubled over in pain. I'm like, I'm done being a Shoney Bear.
I'll ask. I'm sure everybody else is asking, where were the parents?
He just escaped them for a second. You know, he just wanted to like really know, tell me that he knew that I was fake on the inside or real on the inside.
No, real on the inside, maybe. Fake on the outside.
Fake on the outside.
I have a good story.
Or projecting. Go ahead.
Can I tell a story?
Yes.
I was at Michigan and I was the Gopher, and we almost won that game. We were winning at halftime. We weren't a very good football team, but Michigan ended up beating us. And it was the last game of the season, and they were going to tear up their turf and put in grass. So the fans streamed onto the field, and I was walking across the field to get back to the locker room, and one of the Michigan fans ran up to me and grabbed my tail and looked at his friends in the stands and said, I've got the Gopher's tail! Uh-oh. And I kind of, you know, turned around, and I put my arms on the hands on his shoulders, and I can't say anything. And I pushed him away, and then I kept walking, and he came back up to me again. He was like, look, I have the Gopher's tail again! Michigan fans, they're not super bright. So then I again, like, you know, kind of grabbed him by the shoulders, and I shook him a little bit, and I turned him around, and I pushed him away. I'm acting all of this out on Facebook if you can't hear this. And I kept walking, and he ran back up to me again and grabbed my tail again and pulled on it, and it ripped a little bit, and then I was mad. So I grabbed him and I put him in a headlock, and I said, if you grab my tail again, I'm going to rip your head off. And then I let him go, and he fell on the turf, and then I walked away, and he left me alone.
Nice.
Yeah.
It sounds like something like at the end of Toy Story where the toy actually speaks.
You're not allowed to talk.
Sometimes you got to break through that fourth wall in order to make your point heard.
Mm-hmm. So you are a performer as a mascot. Mm-hmm. You, we talk about it all the time. We're a performer as an opera singer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't think we asked the why question. And this is since the special home edition of the show, Up Close and Personal. Why? Why opera? What was your road to that?
Well, both my parents my mom's a voice teacher, my dad's a choir director. So that's why we were in Stevens Point. They both taught at the university.
Stevens Point has an amazing music program.
Do they still?
Yes.
Okay, good. They were putting me in like in front of orchestras when I was like 7 years old. My happy place was singing classical music in front of orchestras. So it wasn't, so only until, you know, I had gone out of college and had been like an Excel monkey working for like venture capital companies in Silicon Valley did I realize my life was no longer fun. Mm-hmm. And why wasn't it fun? It's because I wasn't singing anymore. Mm-hmm. So it took me doing that and then helping on Jim Doyle's governor's campaign until I realized I'm doing everything wrong in life. I need to go back to singing. And so I went to Northwestern to get my graduate degree in vocal performance in opera. And then from there to New York, and I tried to, you know, try to make a living out of it for about 10 years.
How much of it was tried and how much was you did?
But I did. I just, you know, I said making a living is making enough to pay for rent in New York City and to start saving a little money in New York City in your art form. That never happened. Okay. But I was doing it professionally for 10 years, you know, and it was like every dream that I had. And, you know, I was able to express myself and become a true artist. And that to me is everything. I just, you know, you can't do that forever if you want to retire.
Is that area such that the only chance you have of making a living at that is like in New York? Can you be an opera singer anyplace else?
In America, most of the auditions, every audition comes through New York in America. Okay. Some auditions come through San Francisco, Chicago. But if you're not in New York and you want to go to every audition, you kind of have to go to Germany. Or Switzerland or Austria, where they have state-sponsored opera companies. Because opera's huge there because every little city's got their own. It's like being a member of the post office in Stuttgart.
Oh, sure.
Because you're getting, the government pays for you to be an opera singer in certain cities.
It used to be that way here, too. We used to have opera houses all over the place. You go up to the UP and every little town has an opera house.
Yeah. So if you want it, that's why it's called the opera ghetto. Like,
in northern Manhattan, where the house is kind of like Harlem, Washington Heights, that's where all the Broadway folks live and the opera singers live. It's a little cheaper. They all live together because you can't afford anything. So it's amazing that in a couple block radius, you have such immense talent. It's really cool.
So you went into brewing. You had a brew pub. You had a restaurant. Then you decided to run for office. Now you've got a super PAC. But to close out the segment and bring this back to music, if you were going to stay here, and there just isn't an opera niche here, what would be the next type of music? If you could make a living off of doing it here, what would you do?
I would do exactly what I did at the Brewpub. Every Sunday, once a month, I did a little opera concert for people. Mostly it was during the afternoon and older folks came. But I liked running my own live music venue and then being able to book the talent and then being able to run the music. And, you know, we put acoustic panels on all the walls. And I really felt like we had created a wonderful space for live music. And I like being able to be part of the organizing of that as well as one of the performers.
So can we help you set up the next venue, whenever that is?
I'd love to do it. It's hard to do. I like selling beer a little bit. It's a little easier just to sell beer and not have to.
Yeah, maybe we'll get into beer next time around here.
I'm feeling a twofer.
You're feeling what?
A twofer. Beer and venue. They go together.
That would work. We'll continue after this break. You're up first. Nice to play the Great Pumpkin Waltz, I believe is what that is, heading back in as everybody's looking at the leaves falling here and the pumpkin colors abound here at the Kreitlow Abode. And Kristen is fascinated by squirrels.
Abounding at the abode, are we?
Yes, we are.
And is that alliteration?
That's a little bit. Ooh, a little alliteration is, you know.
Do they teach you that in journalism school?
No. They teach that in broadcast school.
Do they teach it in college?
Did I go to broadcast school? No.
A little alliteration is a lot.
It'll take you a long way. We were getting to know Kirk Bankstead a little bit better, and we're going to continue that in one of, you think we're probably going to ask about beer. Of course we're not. Maybe in a bit. But I think we haven't talked about the roots of the Super PAC in a long time. And I always liked when we did our first story about it that you called it a using dark money for good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole point, is that if Citizens United is going to allow virtually unlimited, you know, money into politics, you can complain about it or you can try to fight fire with fire. And I mean, that's part of the reason why not just, you know, this fine radio network, you know, and Up North News and everything else, but the Super PAC is getting a message out around northern Wisconsin that wouldn't be there otherwise if you hadn't started the Super PAC.
Yeah. I want my Super PAC to be shut down, but I only want it to be shut down when the Koch brothers are shut down. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm raising a minuscule amount of money compared to them, and I'm raising it. They're just using their own money. But yeah, I mean, we've, at the clip of a $50 per person, we've now raised about $800,000 over the course of since the insurrection, because that's when I started this thing. And we've spent most of it, and we're, you know, this election is kind of cleaning it all out. You know, and we, at the first big dollars I spent, we spent $40,000 to call persuadable voters in northern Wisconsin, probably like the 7th congressional district, to call them all and say, this is what gerrymandering really means. This is who's doing it. The Republicans are doing it. It's not the Democrats in Wisconsin. And that, and we, I mean, $40,000 just to educate people that this is bad for Wisconsin, bad for democracy. And we kept on going. We sued Ron Johnson. I'm still paying that one off. We sued Ron Johnson, Tom Tiffany, and Scott Fitzgerald for aiding and abetting the insurrection. I think we did it a little too soon because that was before the news came out that he passed the fraudulent electors.
Yes.
So that was another. But the judge dismissed it not on the grounds of the lawsuit because he said we shouldn't be suing in federal court. And he said, you know, we have to go through the WEC, which we know is never going to happen. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so the Super PAC, I'm proud of it. I mean, I hope to God that Evers and Barnes win. you know, I hope to God they do, because I think Wisconsin's in for a rude awakening if they don't. But I can say that I've given it my all in the last 2 years.
Oh, you have. But and not to diminish anything about what you've done, but when you said you've raised $800,000 up to this point, and I thought, when I ran for Congress 10 years ago, they said, if you raise $1.25 million, you'll be fine. I raised $1.25 million, and then, you know, the Republican House Committee or whatever announced a $4 million ad buy. And I was like, and yeah. We had the story to start off the week that Diane Hendricks has now put, I don't have the figure in front of me here, but it's ungodly millions of dollars into this, you know, super PAC to help Ron Johnson by running these racist ads against Mandela Barnes. The amount of money on the other side, it just pales. And it when you look at why elections turn out the way they do, people say, oh, I'm not swayed by political ads. Somebody is. Advertising works, mm-hmm. or there wouldn't be advertising. You know, whether you're talking about Coke and Pepsi or cars, same goes with politics. You know, there's messages out there, and there's entities that can buy unlimited messaging. That was always my bugaboo in the legislature when we actually created the Government Accountability Board, which was the predecessor to the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Yeah. It was because we wanted to go up against that notion that, you know, money equals free speech, that, you know, a dollar for everybody is the same as their voice. And that makes no sense whatsoever, because, again, a Diane Hendricks or, you know, Dick and Liz Zeline or the Koch brothers, you know, with so much more money, theirs is the voice that is heard mm-hmm. far more often in mass media. So it's still just, you know, kind of blows me away that ruling of money equals speech is still the foundation of American political messaging, that you felt compelled to, you know, start a super PAC. I felt compelled to run a campaign. You had to raise more money than you probably ever thought possible for your legislative run. But that's what we're left doing now, is dialing for dollars.
Well, and I bet that our listeners don't really know how much time people spend dialing for dollars versus actually knocking on doors and shaking hands and talking to people, which should be what campaigning is about. It should be about hearing from the people, listening to the people, but at all levels. I mean, they have places in Washington, D.C. where senators are taken out of their official buildings across the street to a cubby so that they can call a bunch of donors to get money. Because that's how they sustain their position in government.
Right.
So the skill set for campaigning has entirely changed. It's all about how much money can you raise. Yeah. And it's not at all about what do you bring to the table to serve the people of Wisconsin.
I've been in one of those rooms when I was running for Congress and went over to the, you know, the Democratic National Committee and the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. And I think they think they're doing you a favor when you're not just there to meet people at the Capitol, but you're going to go into the same room. You're going to be in the same room with members of Congress who are doing the same thing. They're mm-hmm. they're just making phone calls, asking people for campaign contributions. It didn't really feel that fancy. You're still sitting there with a stack of papers, having to call people, and especially having to call people who've given already mm-hmm. to say, hey, I know you've given once before, but can you give $250 again or something like that? And look, I believe that, you know, I believe there is a place for campaign donations. I'm not one of those that says that, you know, we have to completely have, you know, publicly funded elections. I think that there is a role for people to show that they support any given cause or campaign or person. But the rules are just way out of whack, that this is what we have to do, and that you had to found a super PAC just to amplify a voice.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, like I said, you know, in the last essay, like, we have to get dark money out of politics. We have to change the gerrymandering scene around in order to even get close to what we want America to be. And I think that probably 90% of the population would agree with that. Mm-hmm. But you just can't, unfortunately, we found that you can't be running, you can't be saying that during election season, because people don't vote on gerrymandering and they don't vote mm-hmm. on getting money out of politics. They vote on visceral things.
Yes. Like crime, like inflation, yeah. Where, again, if you got more money, you can message about it, even if the message isn't quite right. Who's joining us next hour?
So we have Kelly Westland and Laura Gatsby. Kelly's running for Senate and Laura's running for Assembly up in the Superior Shawangunk region. And we have to win both of those elections. They've been historically Democratic seats in order to make sure that Evers is able to have a vote or a veto.
That's coming up in our next hour, right after the top of the hour break. You're up north.